How do you know if an ethics committee is making a difference? That's the question for today's edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. Practicalbioethics.org. Ellen Averett is Associate Professor for Health Policy and Management at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Terry Roselle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Ellen is a member of the Ethics Committee at KU Hospital. And Terry, you serve as the co-chair of that committee. Ellen, before we get into the research project that you've undertaken at KU to answer the question that's before us, talk to us about how you, as a member of an ethics committee, and I'll ask Terry this as well, how do you, at this moment, measure the effectiveness of an ethics committee?
I would say the committee will sit around and talk about a case until the committee is comfortable. The committee, if there are questions that are unanswered or if there's concern because there's still perhaps a lot of disagreement on a treatment team, the conversations will continue, and conversations with the people involved in the ethics dilemma, in the ethical dilemma, will continue. So I guess it's measured in two ways. One is, how many repeat customers do we get, or how often do we get people coming back? But the other is, do we have some sense from everybody involved, so that maybe the providers, it may be the patient, it may be the patient's family, maybe everybody, that everybody can agree to some course of action? Or at least be okay with it, even if they don't completely agree with it.
Terry, how would you define that?
And Ellen's answer gives evidence that we tend to measure the effectiveness of a hospital ethics committee oftentimes by consultations that are done. Consultation is one of three major things that ethics committees do. We do education, provide educational opportunity, as well as policy development and review. And probably we should be measuring our effectiveness in regard to how we do educationally and with policy as well. But we tend to jump really to, are we doing a lot of consultations?
So it's kind of a process measure then.
And a focus on the element of hospital ethics committees that maybe is more interesting to a lot of ethics committee members, though not all.
You know, I think it's the culture of ethics committees, and they tend to focus on patient issues. Although, you have a broader sense than I do of other committees, but clearly there's a lot of input that committees could have on policies.
So we talked about ethics committee members, but this is an important question to patients and families and the providers that ask for the consultation in the first place. Do you get a sense that they want to have a measure of how effective an ethics committee is, or is it way too individual?
They just want their situation
resolved.
Right. That's my sense. But I think the hospital leadership, in the case of hospital ethics committees, they want to know.
They want it resolved, and they want it resolved competently. And
right.
The physicians and nurses and social workers who are involved also want a competent consultation. The larger question that you asked is that of measuring the quality of a hospital ethics committee itself. So one way to do that is to look at our consultations and to try to measure whether we're doing good or not in that regard. Again, we agree, I think, Ellen, that policy development review is also an important dimension of the committee, and probably we should be doing some qualitative measures there as well, and that education is another important part of what the committee does. And there, too, we should probably be focusing on whether we do that well or less well.
But what gets into the public realm is where the hospital ethics committee interacts with the patient or with the family or with the medical professional. That education and policy is something that's not isn't given as much of a profile, at least in the public eye. Am I right on
that?
Well,
policy would be one step removed probably from the patient family. It very directly affects the caregivers and then also the patients and family. Education is primarily done for caregivers and students, residents,
generally medical professionals.
It's not going to get the press.
Right.
Ethics in the popular among the.
But we have been focusing specifically on the consultation piece because we have been doing consultations, and consultations at KU Hospital have been increasing over the last several years. And quantity is one measure, but it's not the only one.
Well, before we talk about that, Terry, let's get to you, Ellen. And you are starting a research project that is attempting at least to get a qualitative measure of how effective a hospital ethics committee is. Talk to us about that.
What we're really wanting to find out is what is the impact of an ethics consultation. So the idea is to talk to everybody involved in the consultation, the person who initiated the consultation, which most often is a provider. It might be a physician. It might be a nurse. Perhaps talk with the patient or the patient's family or both if they were involved in the consultation as well. Talk with the ethics committee members who were involved in the consultation and try to get very detailed information about what the experience was like for them, in what ways was the consultation helpful, in what ways do they feel it could have been more helpful, just what was the impact of that. And we may have to even ask a few other questions along the way, depending on what people say, but I'm not wanting to approach it with too many preconceived notions, or I'm afraid I will miss some of their answers.
Well, you know, that brings me to my next question. I know in a research project you're not supposed to have expectations of what the results will be, but I'll break that rule anyway and ask what kinds of results do you expect from this?
I think that some providers may be just wanting another place to talk about very difficult issues. A lot of clinical decisions, many clinical decisions, especially in the ICU or with some of the issues we get, they're difficult. There is no easily discernible right and wrong. There's really a choice between what's right and what's right, and which is the better of those two options. And these are difficult decisions that are best made by seeking counsel of other folks. So I think that that's one thing that will come up from providers. And beyond that, I'm not so sure what they're going to be saying. So.
Now, Terry, you had mentioned previously that at KU Hospital you're working to document the quantity of the ethics consults. In 2010, you doubled the numbers of ethics consults at KU Hospital. Talk to us about that process and what you've learned from that.
We file our chart notes, and also I keep track of the number of individual patients as well as formal consults, informal consult requests, and then also the specific notes that we have done to document our response. So at the end of the year, I simply go back through the confidential files and count. In my counting at the end of 2010, compared to the previous 2 years, I noted that we had twice the number of consult requests that we had had in prior years, and a few more than that in terms of multiple consults on the same patient. In 2011, it looks like we will have increased by another 20% or so, probably. So that's important to note because of a lot of reasons, including whether we need more help in responding to our consult requests. But it also raises a question as to whether or not the quantity and quality of our responses correlate in any way. If we're increasing in quantity, are we also doing good, maybe even getting better? And is the number of consult requests, the increase of those, a representation that we are doing better? My hypothesis would be, and I think Ellen alluded to this, is that we probably are getting more requests because we are doing well, but not necessarily so. And that's why we need to go back and ask, how did you experience our participation in patient care as ethicists.
Where did you find most of that? These consultation requests came from medical professionals or a part of the hospital. As a layperson, I would think that most of those requests would have come from a place like the intensive care unit, where there are very difficult cases that present themselves virtually every day. Am I right on that?
They came mostly from care providers, and only a handful came from family or patients. That was one thing that was interesting to note. As to where they came from in the hospital, they came from a little bit of all over. So I have quite a long list of units who consulted us at one time or another. I would have assumed, without going back and actually looking at my data, that they would have come more from a pocket of ICU units, and was surprised that they actually came from a little bit all over. More intensive care than other places, but we have a number of intensive care units at KU as well, and all of them, I believe, consulted us at one time or another in 2010 and again probably in 2011.
So with the information that you gathered, Terry, and the information that you will gather, Ellen, how do you think that this information will reach out broadly across ethics committees? Because there are so many variables from ethics committee to ethics committee and from hospital to hospital. Would you be able to have some common denominators that would be beneficial to an ethics committee member anywhere?
I think absolutely. And I think, first of all, I'm not sure how different ethics committees are from each other. I'm not sure ethics committees are a case of, now both of you may have a different view. It's not a case where if you've seen one ethics committee, you've seen one ethics committee. I think there are some similarities. The people who are involved in them care passionately about doing what's right and trying to figure out these situations. There's very, very little literature. There's essentially nothing on the impact of ethics committees on people, on patients. There's a little, tiny little bit on providers, perhaps. About 20 years ago, there was a working group and an effort to do this, and I couldn't find anything in the literature of where it went from there, so I'm not sure what happened to that working group. They laid out a wonderful structure. But if you go to the literature, there's nothing really on the quality. There are these process variables. There's how many, how fast did somebody get back to the asker, and that sort of thing. But what it was like for the individuals is not there.
Terry, what do you think?
I agree that there's some similarity between ethics committees, and also that there's a good bit of difference amongst them. We have not evaluated as much as some other hospitals have done, and none of us have published enough about it, obviously. That's why you're coming up with a dearth of literature. And so hopefully what some other ethics committees might do upon hearing what we're doing or reading what we do, if we get this published, is that they will be inclined to do evaluation as well. The VA system has been leading the charge in recent years by collecting data, number one, that's both quantitative and has some qualitative measures to it. So they are leaders in this, probably, and we're learning from them, and hopefully others will learn from what Ellen and colleagues are doing in regard to this.
Well, Ellen, do you think that the role of ethics committees will become that much more important in coming years as more of us get older and changes in governmental policies, healthcare reform, budget questions that may or may not be resolved depending on how things work? But how do you think that the future, what kind of role will ethics committees play as we go through all these changes?
I would like to see ethics committees having a big role in informing the policy changes that we undertake as a country. I think that really it's the technology that's going to drive the continued interest in ethics committees. It's just incredible what's being discovered and translated into clinically helpful treatments every day, every year. And I think the questions just seem to get more complex. So I think there's going to continue to be a very strong role for ethics committees.
Terry, the future of ethics committees.
At least the consultation part of what ethics committees do surely shouldn't go away. We've joked a little bit that with the new iPhone and and Siri, who answers every question that you can think of, maybe Siri will take up ethics consultation and will say, does the patient have an advance directive? But even if technology goes that route, I think there will be a place for philosophers and others within a hospital system to be asking questions that are unique to this situation and aren't just parroted sort of questions and are finding resources that would be helpful to providers and patients and families. As we find that resources are more scarce because there are more baby boomers who are aging and wanting more of those resources, surely we'll be talking together and consulting with providers and families and patients about what is really needed and what needs to be shared.
Now, you're about to present on this topic to individuals participating in the certificate, the clinical ethics certificate program at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Terry, what one message would you hope to be getting across to this group?
Quantity isn't everything, and growth is important if we're providing something that people need, but that if we're also doing a good thing, we're asking questions of patients and families and providers as to whether we're doing a good thing in their perspective.
Ellen, your one question for this group.
I guess it's not so much a question, but what I would leave them with is just the importance of listening to the people that they're working with. I think in the rush of everyday work, you just kind of can get into doing your job, and that's getting it done. And in this kind of work, you have to really listen.
Ellen Averett is Associate Professor for Health Policy and Management at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Terry Rozelle is the Rosemary Flanagan Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Both are members of the Ethics Committee at the University of Kansas Hospital. For more information, visit practicalbioethics.org. Practicalbioethics.org. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.